Bevaliam siw ysio holtaga gys y chle sio siach le. Si Robert de Carslach Mish. I'm Bob Carswell, and I'd like to welcome you to this program which goes by the name of Siach Le. In this edition of Siach Le, sy'n edrych sio jay Siach Le. Ciertach den Elion fai Nolwyn, a visitor to the island from Scotland. Researcher Zoe Russell has been spending a week here in the island, looking at various aspects of the island and its UNESCO biosphere status, as a gow, and the smith, a blacksmith, from Andrus, John Neen. Ta urt ons nalben en mesich chau shia rosh, ta jinnus hus pert jay slist nir hui na slagen. En el kagliach bachtel den urt, as harau en riu kurriger mar urt reri asilie hin. Ach, son a chwt smw dy slai gian air, mae'r goesdiach y tolw gys chaw hir dri mwstia yn yrd roes. Sien cysol yr ysyn ar nelia dy enmysig chaw sia roes, as na altyn rai si sir fai yn dri mwstia. Ons yrd hir as yn yrd roes as cromati, tan bol enmysig loch alsh. As chanel sesach dy twrsid sy'n yrd sien gian air loch alsh, mae'r arn jay chaw sia roes. Ach, chau elia ysgil, ta loch alsh ginnw sŵs arn jay biosphere tolw freilt chau sia roes. With the whole of the Isle of Man having been declared a UNESCO biosphere, it differs from other areas of Britain which have been recognised as having biosphere status. One of those places is Wester Ross in Scotland. Zoe Russell of the University of Stirling has been spending a week embarking on fact-finding research on a study of the Isle of Man and its biosphere status and that of Wester Ross. This morning I spoke to Zoe Russell in St John's.
I'm from Edinburgh. My name is Zoe, and I'm at University of Stirling. I'm researching heritage and sustainability. My supervisor is actually from the Isle of Man. So in our discussions about the Wester Ross Biosphere Reserve, it was actually her suggestion that perhaps I come to the Isle of Man and explore some similar issues. So Joe Overty, who's the Biosphere Project Officer, has kindly invited me over and organised a full week of activities for me, meetings with different organisations involved in the biosphere. So that's been, you know, a really interesting experience, getting everybody's perspective, hearing about the work that they're doing. And really, my interest is in the intersection of nature and culture. So I've got an interest in the Manx language in particular, but also agriculture, issues around sustainability. And I think what's really interesting in the Isle of Man context is that the biosphere is a nation-wide project. So really, all these issues intersect. And really, for me as a researcher, I'm interested in where these issues meet, how they intersect, how people come together to kind of, you know, produce particular outcomes around protecting your heritage and moving towards sustainability, as well as kind of recognising historical work that's been done in the political context of that. So this is for my PhD project. So this really arose from my own interest in issues of environment and culture. I have done some previous degrees looking at things like land rights, sustainability, climate change. I've got a sort of social science background, but I've always sort of bordered disciplines. So I've never really had one particular perspective. It's always kind of crossed. You know, society as a whole is kind of my, you know, my research focus. So really it's just me and my interest in these issues, supported obviously by my supervisors, one of whom is doing some really interesting work around heritage and the social values of heritage, and how do you understand, you know, how communities and different people value their own heritage, and how can they be involved in the protection of that. And then my other supervisor comes from a background of sort of the sociology of development. So it's kind of looking at how different societies prioritise development, but also around kind of environmental conservation as well. So they provide me with some support, but really it's quite a kind of, it's a project really that I'm just driving forward on my own, funded of course by the Economic and Social Research Council through the Doctoral Training Partnership.
And your visit here is a week long on this occasion. Who have you had an opportunity to talk to so far?
So I've been here since Monday, so actually my week's nearly over, and I've spoken to some really great people from Culture Vanin, from Eco Vanin, from the Manx Farmers Union. I've spoken to people in the DEFA department. I've spoken to residents in the street, including your own wife. I'm meeting with someone later from a university context, and there's an event on which is around sustainable development goals. So I believe that's more a kind of a business stakeholder type event. I was at the Manx National Heritage Museum speaking to some of the staff there, which was really interesting, and the Manx Wildlife Trust, spoken to some people there, most of whom are sort of stakeholders in the biosphere. So a lot of our discussions were kind of around their ongoing work and how the biosphere's changed that, and kind of what's coming up for them, and kind of what their perspective is on trying to get different stakeholders working together to really achieve the vision of the biosphere, and what will that mean for them in practice.
Have you had an opportunity to talk to anybody from UNESCO themselves about the criteria that they look for in a biosphere?
Not yet, actually, but Peter Bridgewater, I don't know if you were aware, did the inaugural biosphere lecture. Yeah, Professor Bridgewater. So I had hoped to come over, actually, to see that, but I wasn't able to. So I'm actually watching that on YouTube. So that's quite a nice, that's given the kind of UNESCO perspective on things. Obviously, as a kind of, as an academic, I've had my head in a lot of sort of UNESCO policy documents and things like that, so you do kind of get their perspective from that. But actually, Professor Bridgewater's lecture kind of brings it to life, especially in the Isle of Man context. And he had a really great, I mean, I'm only halfway through it, but it's sort of his kind of, his take on it is that, you know, don't ask what your biosphere can do for you, but what you can do for it. So it really brings to life this notion of kind of people working together, you know, for a to create, you know, what the biosphere can be, rather than sort of UNESCO saying this is what we want. Obviously there are guidelines for how it works. There's different kind of zones, but actually as a model the biosphere is quite flexible in how it can be implemented. So certainly already comparing the Westeros Reserve to the Isle of Man Reserve, the fact that the one here is embedded in the government, it's a kind of nation reserve, you know, that's different from the one in Westeros, which is, you know, not kind of tied to the government in any way. So it's interesting already to think about the fact that as a model it can be implemented quite differently. But certainly I think that's not really what the biosphere aims to do, is necessarily, you know, set out rigid criteria and then try to judge places on it. It's much more this sort of aspirational thing of, you know, trying to build collaboration rather than, you know, you can't do this, you must do this.
You've had an opportunity to see Westeros and here so far. Mm-hmm. Are there any particular differences or particular similarities then that have surprised you so far?
I think it's probably slightly too early to say that yet, mostly just because I haven't actually spent very much time in Westeros yet. So I'm only about 10 months into this project, and the first 10 months really is set aside for doing a lot of reading. I had to pass like an annual progress review in order to be confirmed, you know, as a candidate. And, you know, there's kind of a lot of paperwork associated with the PhD, you have to get your ethical approval and stuff. So being here on the Isle of Man was really one of my first engagements with people who are trying to deliver biosphere in practice. So I'm hoping that what I've learned this week will kind of set me up to be a bit more knowledgeable when I go into the Westeros context and be able to kind of probe some of the things that I've heard from people here and see whether or not there are those similarities and differences. I suppose the obvious thing, the one thing that does differ quite a lot, is that a lot of the land here is publicly owned, whereas in Scotland, you know, it's no secret that we've got you know, the most concentrated pattern of private land ownership in Europe. So that's obviously kind of a key difference, because who owns the land affects, you know, how it can be used and what can be achieved. And then I suppose the other thing is, you know, population-wise, Westeros is one of the most sparsely populated areas in Europe. So we've got about 8,000 people in total, but that's sort of in the context of a kind of, I think it's 530,000 hectares is covered in the biosphere. So, and that's mostly quite rural. So that differs quite a lot from the Isle of Man context, where you can go from sort of being in Douglas to being in these diverse kind of habitats. So obviously things are more, a bit more integrated here, I suppose, with the kind of urban and rural together. You know, it's I would say the Isle of Man is, obviously it's smaller, but there's this element of it being a cultural landscape, and you can kind of see that, you know, quite clearly. Whereas in the Westeros context, and I suppose in the Scottish Highlands more broadly, you do kind of get these issues where people would perceive the landscape to be quite natural, when in actual fact it is quite cultural, and humans have kind of modified these landscapes over time, but you wouldn't necessarily be aware of that just by looking. So I think you can see that, you know, more in the Isle of Man, obviously, with 88% of the island being agricultural.
So this has been a week here now, and you're only 10 months into the project so far. So how long will it be running for, and what sort of return trips are you expecting to make?
So it's a 3-year project in total. So next year is really my fieldwork year, so that's when I hope to be out and about for pretty much the entire year, being involved in projects in Westeros in particular. But as part of the 3-year programme that the Scottish Graduate School for Social Science do, they're the kind of the body that govern ESRC funded students, they have a function in an overseas institutional visit. So I'd like to take that opportunity up and use that to come to the Isle of Man again, and do a bit more work. Probably, you know, once I've completed some of the stages in Westeros, that might give me then, you know, some nice material to kind of come back with and share a bit of learning. The two, you know, the biospheres are sort of connected anyway in their own way with the UK biosphere network, so there is kind of already that sort of knowledge exchange informally between the reserves, so being able to tap into that maybe would be quite nice, and kind of keep the communication channels open and to be able to follow up. Certainly everybody I've spoken to has been really open to, you know, speaking further, answering any other questions by email, so that's been really good. And obviously I would like to come back. I suppose it's funding dependent.
Oh, well, good of my motor. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay. Tapala, we would say in the Gaelic.
Zoe Russell of the University of Stirling, who's been collecting some initial information as part of her study comparing the background to the UNESCO biosphere status of Westeros in Scotland and of the whole of the Isle of Man. Canelid de bollach sig a crin vlein rugger dunyas en ersen ons cumagilgach mar duan cring. A sanach cajins on Edmunds of Earl, John Neen. Ach son Gilgeren, te en oxen dunya sio mar a gau. Van gau rugget on skill Andreas, mush an ala jeg mi hauna. Ach, mavar mi grey, canelich a sig a crin vlein rugger e. Benem, duin a kring regedden ons leore kortes en Guinness kut de rauw mor een mannen ach shinne. Eget rei shen, te dunje van a mast oxen, hoer mach de rauw a gil gege gauw, as we gol a shilje as cor ersen djinnu recortesen, Walter Cleary, na Walter Clark, as rum sa, grei de rauw kuste eben er lie, djinn der oele eesje gauw, joris djinn ne eesjen oxen va kochonaldrish. A vunja sly elia. As ma saw, mach a shen son Laura Cortes and Guinness, vad greid rawi mush chied blain as care the eish lorishin tre hure bes. Was there some doubt about the actual age of John Neen by the time of his death in 1958? By some reckoning, he'd been born in November 1852. to Eleanor Margaret Cannon, as she was, who was married to John Neen. John Neen Sr., in this case, a blacksmith of Sandygate, Andrus. On the other hand, there's a record of his being christened in Kirkandrus on the 22nd of February 1860. There's no reason why he couldn't have been christened at 8 years of age rather than as an infant. However, according to his own story, when he was 6 years of age, his father had moved to set up a smithy in Jerby. So, if he'd been born in 1852, they'd have had to come back to Kirkandrus from Jerby for the christening in 1860. If we reckon he might have been born in November of 1859, he'd still have been about 99 years old by the time of his death in June 1958. So he was certainly an elderly man, but the reason he's particularly fated is that he was a fluent speaker of the Manx language. There we got John Neen to introduce himself. My name is Juden Kring. I was born and baptised in Kirkandrus. I was doing smithying. I was the smith for all my days. That's my trade. They were pieces of autobiography brought together from being interspersed through a conversation of John Neen's recorded with him in 1948. Apart from the fact that the Gao is speaking Manx, with his being somewhere between his late 80s and late 90s in 1948, his memories are of historic interest, as in this recollection of Ramsay.
The Magoldrum Sire and Lair Utan Souda, as in me Goldrum Sire, Oliver Rad Shule, as in me Chitus and Gullion Boer Monk. As Ash and the Gold doesn't bear and Mullach and Bay, Janach, as for Geno Keel then. As Ash and the Gold Seas doesn't draw Clark, as the Gold Mark, Erborach, as a root tie and a bee Erborach, as a shen, Tashen, but then tie toot, as Shen William and tie and bear. As the Michit Back, Susan Valle, as Van Bud, Bowler, Bud Greck, Bud Check, Crack McCabell, as an Olach, as an Holyard Shin, Haruveg Unison, Unlan Shin, as Bowlmoor Follum, as Payola Mugila, as Tamir Fagan and Valle, and Tamir Fagan Long. Lurachan and Che, come a fagan, the feeling, the feed, the kid, Triach, Osen, Eren, Tre,
Oyo,
Sol, Azes, Gin, Lin, Blinan, Osen, and a chit was, but Goba, less, I, less Osche, as Golden Yester. Come here, Fagan, Roche, or some fair Roche will draw the bee herrison in Ostia.
I was going to Ramsay one day in the summer, says the Gow, and I went to Ramsay walking all the way, and I was coming to the big Monk Mill. Now, in Johnson's Guide for 1851, J.B. Lawton says this about Ramsay. A large windmill has lately been built at the northern entrance to the town by J. Monk, Esquire, to whose enterprise and activity the public are much indebted. Constance and William Radcliffe refer to it in their book Shining by the Sea, A History of Ramsay, where they tell us of the windmill, also known, they say, as Monk's Mill, all his air mills, now Beaconsfield Tower. Lieutenant John Monk, a retired Royal Navy officer, had established his family in Ramsay in the early 1800s, and he lived in the house which later became the Royal George Hotel in Ramsay, the Royal as it's generally known, and from 1841 his son William John Monk became prominent in Ramsay affairs, and one of the family enterprises was this mill built in 1851, which the Gow saw as he walked into Ramsey that summer's day. "Then," he says, "I was going to the road, the top of the Sandy Road." Now, the Sandy Road, that's the road which later became known as the Bowring Road in Ramsey. "And they were making a church there," he says. So this must have been sometime during the building of St. Olave's Church in Bowring Road. Work was commenced there in 1861, but it seems to have been quite a slow process, with work not being finished off until about 1870. However, the Gow says he was passing the church when it was still being built, so his personal reminiscence here is taking us back to some time between 1861 and 1870. The Gow goes on, "Then I went to the stone bridge, and I went out on the moorag, and there weren't any houses on the moorag at that time. There was one thatched house on it, that's all the houses that were on it, and I was coming back to the town. And the place they were selling the horses and the cattle and all those things, there was nothing there that day, and a big empty place, and grass in it and around it. And I've seen the town," he says, "I've seen boats, the quay, I've seen scores or 100 vessels there at the one time, all sail, and then years from then, they came from that and they were working with fire and water, and going to the fishing." So here he's remembering the change from the days of a large fleet of sailing vessels going to the fishing to when the vessels became steam-powered. And finally, he says, "I've seen in Ramsey before there was any bridge built at all over the water." And since he's been talking about the quayside, this must be a reference to the iconic swing bridge over the harbour in Ramsey, which was proposed in 1888 and opened in 1892. Apart from Ramsey, the Gow also gives us a glimpse of the annual hiring fair, which was held in a field behind the Mitre in Kirkmichael. But, as well as the Mitre, there were plenty of other outlets for drink on that occasion. The Gow is talking here with Harry Bodach about it. In Kirkmichael, "Were you ever at the market in Kirkmichael?" he asks Harry Bodach, Harry Boyd. "There were men," he says, "going for a year for the land, and a farmer coming and giving a penny for you. A penny was the thing they were wanting. They weren't giving more than a penny when they were making terms for it. And almost 20 little houses made for giving out the drink. A market covered with a sail, a little house covered with a sail." So this would be a handy source of canvas in a sail in the days when fishing vessels had up to 7 sails apiece and several sets of them, and here they were being used as covers on these stalls, the little houses, for selling drink. And finally here the Gow identifies where this hiring fair was being held, Cool and Tyos, behind the pub, he says. So that's behind the Mitre in Kirkmichael. John Neen, a Gow. There's just time to tell you that you can go along this very evening, Thursday the 5th of September, at 7:45 to St. Catherine's Church in Port Erin. And there you'll find the Londo Male Voice Choir, ready to entertain you. There's no charge for admission, but there will be a retiring collection. So that's at St. Catherine's in Port Erin at 7:45 this evening. Or if you're on the north this evening, you can go along and sing or play, or you can just sit back and enjoy the entertainment at Ramsey Folk Club, and that'll be from 8:20 this evening in the Captain's Bar at the Mitre Hotel in Ramsey. Let's look ahead a couple of days now to the weekend. On Saturday, the 7th of September, at 7:30, four-time Cleveland medalist Mandy Griffin will be in concert in Cathedral Isle of Man. You can enjoy her beautiful singing in the setting of the wonderful acoustic of the cathedral. And you can enjoy tea, coffee and light refreshments afterwards in the company of other music lovers. So that's a rare treat, with soprano Mandy giving a solo concert at 7:30 on Saturday in St. German's Cathedral in Peel. Meanwhile, on the north again, the Summer Singers will be giving their final concert of the year in St. Paul's Church in Ramsey, with their special guests Gareth Moore on organ and songs from the tenor voice of Mike Corkle. Your compere for the evening is Judith Lay. It's free admission. Again, there'll be a retiring collection. Light refreshments are provided too. So that's the Summer Singers and special guests in concert in St. Paul's Church in Ramsey. That's 7:30 p.m. again this Saturday, the 7th of September. As nish strailiam great and treia jitki delia, as signed un corcion erchle sho shachle rish. The time has come, the walrus said, and so we come to the end of this edition of Shachle. Shachle will be back next Thursday, but now from me, Bob Carswell, Bombeen, Robert de Carslach, Slednew.